think people who perhaps haven't built the model, they think that the model is reality. They go, oh, well, this, you know, financial modeler has built this model for me, and the model says that we're going to make millions of dollars, and therefore that's what's going to happen. And that's not the case at all. A model is just a projection or what you think is going to happen. It's not reality. It's not what's going to happen. It's just a construct of, you know, you change the inputs, the outputs change. And if those inputs are wrong, your model could be completely wrong.
Hello and welcome to Tech for Finance, where we help finance pros stay ahead of the game, develop their skills and free up time for the things that matter most using technology. Please like and subscribe. Hey everyone, welcome. Today I've got the pleasure of introducing Danielle Stein-Fairhurst on the show. She's a Microsoft MVP, she's an author and a corporate trainer, and she's just got back from Saudi Arabia. So I'm sure you can speak a little bit about that, Danielle, with plans to go over to Las Vegas. So yeah, great to have you with us, Danielle.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
No worries at all. So tell me more about Saudi Arabia. What was going on there?
Oh, yeah. That was it was really interesting. Yeah, so I was working for it was actually a graduate training program as part of a fund there. And it was always fun to do, to get out of your comfort zone and do something a little bit different. And just fantastic people. Like, that was so, so great. So we did financial modeling for a week, and then we did some other finance stuff for another week. So I was there for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really good. That place has changed so much. I tell you what,
yeah.
It's and the second week was actually Ramadan, so that was interesting. I didn't get to, because you don't eat or drink from sun up to sundown.
Mm-hmm.
And so as trainers, it's, you know, not really the done thing to be, you know, drink, even just drinking something. So it was quite. Yeah, that was quite a challenge. Yeah, it was interesting. It was really different.
Hmm. Yeah, intermittent fasting without knowing about it, eh?
Yeah, it was a bit of that, yeah.
Very good. And Las Vegas, you said it's the Excel World Championship. Is that what's going on over there?
Yeah, so there's you've heard about the Excel Esports,
yeah.
So that is, so the Financial Modeling World Cup is like 8 times a year. Which is amazing. But then they also have these kind of Excel eSport challenges, and I co-commentate sometimes, and I'm actually doing one in a couple of weeks' time for the Asia-Pacific region, so that'll be really fun. And I just talking to the organisers about actually going to the finals, which is in the HyperX Arena in Vegas. So that would be really great. They kind of have a conference as part of that. So you and I met at the Global Excel Summit back in February. So it's kind of similar but different. So yeah. Just a
very good.
Just some great events that are happening, you know, in the Excel and finance world.
Yeah, you must sometimes feel like you don't know what time zone you're in.
yes, I feel like that sometimes. Yeah, I'm back in Sydney now, so for the next few weeks at least.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Great. Well, I need to big you up a little bit. Because obviously you are, you know, really good at what you do. And you did the Financial Modeling in Excel for Dummies book, which was cool.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Using Excel for Business and Financial Modeling book as well.
That was the first book that I wrote, yeah.
Which was
and
the
then that's because the problem about writing a book about Excel or in Excel is that Excel changes. And so I've actually had to do 3 editions of that book, and the last one was a couple of years ago now, so I have to decide whether I'm going to do that again. And the Dummies book, we've actually done 2 editions of that.
I fell into the same trap. So back when ChatGPT exploded, I had to scratch that itch, and I did a little bit of a guide just to see how it would go. So I released the guide, did pretty well, and then it was immediately out of date.
Of course, yeah, something like that. It's just changing all the time.
Yeah, that's it. So I had to shelve it.
And now thinking about more sort of evergreen content types to reduce the fatigue, because otherwise it becomes a
One of the things about financial modeling is that, you know, best practice doesn't change. So, and I mean, the same with finance. I mean, a P&L and a cash flow, it's always going to look like that. So it's not something that changes, but the technical, like the technical Excel side of things changes.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'll try and get into the nitty gritty if we can. So you've obviously trained a lot of people and obviously traveled the world doing so, right? So, I mean, if you could highlight some common mistakes that you see some people, you know, doing, whether they're experienced or whether they're sort of entry level, when they are building those financial models in Excel, what are they and how would you sort of maybe advise that they avoid them?
Yeah, lots of things. I mean, and some of them are to do with Excel skills and some are to do with modeling. And I think in terms of the modeling, what I think is really important that a lot of people don't do is just sort of separate your calculations and your inputs and just make clear, you know, what's an input and what's a calculation. So, you know, the idea of modeling is that you have assumptions, so you have, you know, hard-coded numbers that change and then some formulas that link to those numbers, and making it really clear that, you know, this is an input and this is an output. I think that's probably one of the most basic things. Probably one of the things that you should, that if you're not worried about, you probably should be, is like errors, so having mistakes in the model, and that's either just Excel errors or actually, you know, calculation issues or something just being like assumptions being wrong. You know, I think some people are not always aware of just how easy it is to have an error. So that's probably something else that's important.
So pretend I am a dummy for a second, because I am a bit of a dummy.
I'm sure
right?
you're not.
So I am when it comes to Excel and modeling. can you give a cut? So you said separate the inputs from the calculations. Mm. Can you give a couple of examples of some inputs and a couple of examples of some calculations for us?
Yeah. So like, for example, you know, if you're doing a like debt calculations. So, you know, if you need to calculate the amount of debt that's or the borrowings, or and then the interest will drive from the the cash flow. You know, the, for example, say the interest rate would be an input. So whatever that interest rate will change, you know, how much that will affect everything. It'll affect the cash flow. It'll affect the debt. All of that stuff. But you need to make that clear. You know, this is and there might be multiple. Like there might be a fixed and a variable, and a, you know, it might change. And you know, there could be a whole lot of complexities there. And you know, just I suppose that's an example of something that you need to make really clear. That this is an input, this is a variable. You're allowed to change it if it changes, but if you do, you need to document what changed, where did you get it from. And of course, because it's an input, you need to link to that cell. So you might have a single cell, and that's your input, and you change that number, and all of your calculations will change. If you don't link to that number, it's not going to work. Mm. And, you know, it's one of the like really rookie mistakes is where you're, you know, happily changing something away, you know, changing one of the input variables, but nothing's changing because you haven't actually used it. You've actually hard coded it into the formula, for example, rather than linking to the input. So that's that's pretty easy for something to go wrong in your model, because you think that that's the assumption, but that's actually not what's driving the model. Mm. Do you want me to get into time lag we're so far away from each other. I'm in Sydney and you're in the UK. Do you want me to go into like the definition of a financial model? Is that something that people know? So
Yeah, please
yeah,
do.
Yeah, because it's people kind of sometimes get a little bit, you know, the actual, you know, what a model is. So we kind of talk, you know, say the model is like a structure, which is almost always in Excel, and it's something that, you know, you kind of have like a problem, or, you know, like I need to launch a new product, or I need to figure out my cash flow, or, you know, something like that that you need to know, and a financial model will solve that problem for you. It will say, well, you know, based on this and this and this and this, this is what your cash flow will look like. You know, that's really the purpose of a model. Or you might need to know, what's my break even, or what's my profitability, you know, something like that. And the model will, you know, you put in, you know, what you know. And of course, I think what people get, they think, people who perhaps haven't built the model, they think that the model is reality. They go, oh, well, this, you know, financial modeler has built this model for me, and, you know, the model says that we're going to make millions of dollars, and therefore that's what's going to happen. And that's not the case at all. You know, a model is just a projection, or a, you know, what you think is going to happen. It's not reality. It's not what's going to happen. It's just a construct of, you know, you change the inputs, the outputs change. And if those inputs are wrong, your model is could be completely wrong. And I think that's something to be really careful of.
And I think as well, and this is from personal experiences as well as everything else, is sometimes people jump to trying to find like a whizzy tool, or now with all of the AI that's going on, they'll think, oh, you know, if I want to do a decent model, then I've got to build in all of like this predictive analytics and all of these AI algorithms to solve the problem for me. But I think, yeah, there's probably a time and place for that when you get to the level of maturity that you can use that to enhance the model. But I think the recommendation here would be, there is a lot that you can do with what you already know and variables that you can set yourself to build those models before you start ramping up the complexity, because otherwise you can get down a bit of a rabbit hole. I don't know whether you'd agree.
Yeah, I mean, there are some software that will build a model for you, for sure. I mean, there are sort of other pieces of software, so you don't even need to touch Excel if you don't want to. I guess I don't really get involved in that, because, you know, as a obviously I'm a Microsoft MVP, so I just, Excel is my toy, and I like to I'm in the business of helping people to have this, to upskill and to be able to build it for themselves. Whereas if I show them how to, you know, use some fancy software, all that's going to happen is that they have to pay somebody a lot of money to maintain it. They've got to pay licenses. They've got to, you know, they become dependent on something else. And that can get quite expensive. And sometimes it's just as difficult to figure out. So, you know, I just, yeah. And I mean, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say don't use those. You know, if you want to go down that path, that's fine. But what I do is show people how to use Excel, because everyone has Excel. And I think it's one of the best skills, you know, as a business owner, or a, you know, somebody working in business, just having really good Excel skills. You know, having built a model yourself from scratch is just something that's just a really good skill to have. And the only way you can get that skill is by actually doing it. So if you build your own model, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, you'll increase your skills. You'll be much better at it. And, you know, just, I mean, you can learn by looking at other people's models, you know, but I hate to say it, but just reading a book on financial modeling is not going to do it for you. Fantastic. Yeah. Yes, by all means, read a book. But to learn modeling, you actually have to build a model. You know, I think that's the best way to do it.
And I just want to, stress that, because sometimes there are shortcuts and ways to speed up your workflow. But I remember the conversation that I had with Richard Nero, who I believe you also know, because we had lunch together at the event back in February.
That's right. Yeah.
But we were talking about the use of ChatGPT specifically in Excel for, you know, creating formulas or, you know, basically doing the doing as opposed to doing the assisting. But I think that the biggest gap there is you are not building a skill and you are not learning if something else is doing it for you. Plus, there's nothing wrong if you want to use AI to augment that in the future. But from my perspective, you'll get best use out of these tools once you have that base understanding. So my recommendation is always do before you automate. And it might be a little bit controversial, but in a world that's going to quickly get towards, you know, oh, well, we'll just delegate that to an AI, it increases the risk of inaccuracies and errors and all of that sort of stuff. But if you've first done it manually from scratch and you've learned that skill, then it puts you in a much better position to guide and augment whatever the next wave is if you are using some of these WYSI tools. So I think sometimes doing the hard job of building the skill and doing stuff manually first, even if you automate it in the future, is still going to be valuable use of your time. Really quick, guys, as you know, I don't run ads and I no longer sell anything on here. So to help me, it'd be great if you could share with just one other person, leave a review, give a thumbs up and subscribe. It really does make a difference. Now back to the show.
I think that's really good advice because I think it's quite scary to not understand financial modeling and then just go, hey, ChatGPT, could you build a model for me? And as we know, if ChatGPT doesn't know the answer, it makes it up. And, you know, that's a little bit frightening to have generative AI creating our financial data. That's not really where you want to go with that. And as you say, you need to know what you're doing. You know, I think it can be a good learning tool, though. I mean, I think if you give it a crack on your own and then you help use it, like, you know, like when I first learned, I learned off colleagues. Like, there weren't, like, it was so long ago that there wasn't, blogs and such an availability of online resources as there is now. And I learned from my colleagues. You know, I'd be like, oh, I'm stuck on this formula. Oh, you know, can you give me, how do you do that? And I think, you know, if we can use AI in that way, I think it's a great way to learn, because the fantastic thing, of course, about using Copilot or ChatGPT is that it's in your context rather than Google, where you say, I'm trying to do this. And it'll go, well, here's something that's similar. And then you have to figure it out and apply it to your own data. Whereas, you know, with AI, you can actually feed it some dummy data, obviously, not real data, and it will actually give it to you in exactly the format that you need it to be. So I think that is, which is exactly what my colleagues used to do for me. They'd go, oh, you just do it like that, and, you know, oh, yeah, great. And then that's just a really great way to learn.
Yeah. Did you, have you heard recently about this coding bot called Devin? Have you seen any of this in the news?
No. What's going on with that?
Okay. So this is where it gets a little bit scary. And this comes back to the point about having trust in the AI to do something without you having that base knowledge of the way that things work. So Devin, and I can't remember the name of the company, which is frustrating, but it's an autonomous bot. Yeah. So at the moment, when you are speaking to AI, it's kind of on an ad hoc basis, right? You have to give it quite a lot of instruction. You know, here's where I am. This is the result that I want you to produce. Can you help me with it? But when we start getting into the territory of autonomy, that's when we can just give the AI a task and then it will self-guide to get to those outputs by itself. Now, the thing that's a bit creepy about Devin, but also fascinating and potentially quite exciting, is not only can it self-guide by prompting itself, but it can consume external sources of data and train itself as it's carrying out the task. So okay. It can connect itself to the internet. It can go and it can search like GitHub and all of these repositories for information, and it can advance its own knowledge as it builds code for you, right? But the reason I say it's a bit scary is because there's a guy called Ethan Mollick, who I'd suggest that everybody follows. I can't remember the university that he works for, but he's like the AI guru in the education space, and he gets all of the early access to these new tools and all of these new models, just because, you know, he's the go-to tester for this sort of stuff. And what he did is he actually set up Devin with a Reddit account with a task, and let it loose.
Wow.
And very quickly, people got fooled into thinking that Devin was a real person, you know, producing this code and going through these scenarios. And then it also started trying to charge for its work within the Reddit thread.
Oh my gosh.
So he had to take it down because obviously, you know, it was fooling people, right? Mm. So I mean, it's obviously a bit of a side note to the discussion that we're having, right? But if we were to translate that into the financial modeling side of things and say we've got an autonomous bot that's going to build models for us, how do we know how it came to the end
result?
Well,
it's just copying people's behavior, isn't it? And it'll just... It'll probably create the same errors that people create every day, you know. But yeah, it's interesting, yeah. But I think you've still got to know what you're doing to create something like that. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, 100%. But how do you guide it without that base knowledge? You see what I mean? And for me, if you've already got a team of developers, and you are supplementing their work to the point where they can guide it and control it, that's fine. But for a company that's, you know, investing in it with no development resource, that have got no ability to query and validate, you know, that's where it starts getting a bit scary. You know, so again, translating that to financial modeling, if you don't have somebody in your team that's got experience at the ground level of, you know, building these models, and you get to the point where you've got an autonomous bot that can create them for you, it's the same principle, isn't it? You know, I think governance and that validation and that side of things is going to become more and more important. But yeah, maybe a conversation for another day, right?
Yeah, no, that's really, governance is going to become really important. Well, even more than it is now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's pull the conversation back, because I can talk forever and get down all sorts of rabbit holes when it comes to all of this sort of stuff. But let's say that somebody's built a base model. Yeah. So they've followed best practices, they've separated inputs, you know, they've not hard coded the variables into the calculations and that sort of thing. Do you have any frameworks that can then elevate those models? So how do we take sort of a decent financial model and then take it to the next level so that it's either more useful, it translates better to the wider team? Do you have any sort of methodologies or advice there?
Yeah, I think it's building a model is something that I feel is often never finished. You just keep keep working on it and keep working, and it just expands to the time that you have. And so you think something's finished, and then you go, oh, let's just make, you know, a few extra, and you're constantly making it better. But I think one of the things that is always often overlooked is the visuals, you know, the way that things look, you know, because you know, a lot of what we do, you know, we as a person working in finance or as a business person, you walk in, you are constantly, people are judging you on how you look. You think they're not, but of course they are. You know, they make assumptions about you because of the way that you look. And the same with the model. You know, they look at, you know, if you send someone a report and it's got, you know, messy formatting, and there's like, you know, sometimes you've got currency, sometimes you've got one decimal place, sometimes you've got none, and you know, it's just all over the place, and it's all just black and white, and you got the grid lines in there, and you know, it's just, you obviously haven't, you know, had attention to detail, you haven't really you know, just taken the time to say, hey, this model is important, this model is accurate, I have taken the, you know, however long it takes, just at the end of the project, just to make it look nice, you know, make it look like something that you should pay attention to. You know, I think that's perhaps something that's probably the quickest win, I think, with, you know, people that that I often see. Like sometimes, you know, some just spreadsheets or models can just look like a dog's breakfast. You know, they just look so... You know, and I just don't think you lose credibility. Yeah, if people don't can't follow it, or they don't, you know, it just looks messy. I don't know if that did that answer your question. Was that what you asked?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, no, that's fine. Like an average model, like you say, it might just be a matrix, right? You know, and that's not really gonna mean stuff to people. So yeah, maybe just having like a dashboard sheet that you create that people immediately see when they open, with some visuals and some highlights, would be good, right? And that kind of ties into how it translates to non-finance professionals, because of course we have to assume that the models we're building aren't just finance related. You know, it relates to the entire business, you know, especially if it involves, you know, headcount, cash flow, all of that sort of stuff that we mentioned. But I mean, I don't know what you've seen working well, but obviously if the model itself is pretty enough to the point where anybody could open it and from that first sheet get an impression of what's going on and have their questions answered, then great. You know, that might be the good versus average model, right? But is there a scope to say, right, well, actually, we maybe shouldn't share entire models with the wider team, and actually we should be cutting out the highlights and presenting in a more collaborative way? I mean, I guess it depends on the technical chops and the appetite for the wider team to open Excel and delve into the detail, right? But is there a balance where maybe we should translate, even if it's a really pretty model?
Yeah, for sure. I think that collaboration as a team is sometimes not our strong point. Because modeling can be a bit of an individualistic thing, and I've got my model, and people often get protective of their data, or they get protective of their model, and they often kind of, you know, keep it to themselves. But that's not how it should be, and you know, modeling should be a team sport. but that doesn't always happen. So, you know, having your ways or techniques to do that, to have collaboration, to have everybody on the same page, you know, having using Excel online and Teams and things like that is a better way of doing it, and being able to show perhaps parts of the model, not always showing everything, perhaps, you know, having different views. You know, Power BI is probably better for doing something like that, but yeah, some of the software I talked about earlier would do a better job of some of that kind of stuff, where you're actually looking at different views for different people. But yeah, I guess there are different types of models as well. So you know, thinking about when you build the model, think about you know, who the audience is. Is it for another, like one of your colleagues? You know, if they know what you're doing, then you have, you know, documentation, and you kind of leave all of the calculations open. But if it's for somebody, perhaps, you know, a client or someone who's not necessarily interested in the detail behind it, you might hide some of that, or you might hide some tabs or group parts of the, you know, the dirty laundry that they don't necessarily need to see, because they're not going to go into that much detail. And people do get a bit overwhelmed when they open up a model and they're like, whoa, you know, look at all these formulas that are, you know, this long. And you know, you do want to kind of make it look nice for them, and accessible, and something that they can actually use.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for knowing your audience.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe not, you know, maybe you don't throw it over the fence straight away, right? You know, you seek guidance from another team member to say, look, I'm thinking about sharing this with individual A. You know, how do you think they're going to get on with it? You know, is it too much? You know, can you just do a bit of a peer review and let me know that I'm heading along the right tracks? Because you're absolutely right. Sometimes it can become an individual exercise where you can consume hours and it makes sense to you and, you know,
it feels like you're doing amazing things. You've built it and your brain works in a certain way, but not everyone else is going to follow it.
Yeah,
so I think
absolutely.
Where you share something with a colleague and, you know, say to them, especially if you, particularly if you're going to present a model to a group or to someone more senior or to a client or something like that, to actually do a bit of a rehearsal where you say, look, can I just explain this model to you? Does it make sense? Like if I explain it in this way, and they'll go, ah, but what have you done with that? And you'll be like, oh, didn't think of that. Or something like that. That can be quite helpful.
And I think there's also something to be said for checkpoints as well. You know, so before you get to the very end and have consumed however many hours in building it, maybe that peer review to make sure that you are building in the right direction. You know, so you've started the basics. You know, oh, so and so, can you have a quick look at this? This is the direction that I'm going in. Obviously, it's not complete yet, but am I along the right lines before I go too far into this?
Yeah, because particularly when it comes to collecting data, it can often, you might collect it in such a way and spend hours analyzing it and stripping it out and then find that's not necessary and you can waste a lot of time. So making sure that you get things in the right format before you start building can also be quite helpful.
Because especially if you're, you know, if you're pulling data from a finance system or elsewhere, right? You know, you might have a lot of data points to your point there that may just not be relevant. But of course, to you, because you've got access to the data, you think, oh, you know, that's maybe another data point that I can add into the model, or that might be useful. But then quickly you end up with like 20 different inputs, as you say, and to your target audience, they might not be relevant. Oh, I don't care about that. You know, that's not relevant. Like you can strip out half of that model. So I think simplicity is always
data in a model is just like single inputs, and that's, you know, if we're talking about finance modeling, is often not a lot of data. But if there is a lot of data and model, I guess it's clear in my mind because it was something I was working on yesterday where we just have like that, like literally hundreds of thousands of rows, and you're pulling it into, you know, using Power Query, of course. I don't know what we did with that before. Well, we just simply couldn't do it before Power Query, but we're pulling it into the model, and I was chopping off a whole lot of going, oh, I don't need that, don't need that. And then I went, oh, maybe I do need it. But the great thing about Power Query, of course, is that I can just go back and grab those columns again if I find that I've removed something I didn't need. And so Power Query can be quite good like that, where you can just pull in what you think you need. And because most of the time we can be a bit gluttonous when it comes to data. We go like, I just want, give it to me. I want everything, because you think you might need it. Whereas with Power Query, you can be a little bit more sparing, and, you know, otherwise you're just saving space and saving complication if you try to keep the data a little bit, you know, only pull through the columns that you actually need.
Very good. And that kind of ties back to the point about inputs, doesn't it? So, you know, we're saying fundamentally there needs to be clean and relevant data to start with, because that's going to form the inputs that you then use to build the model, and then separate calculations to actually build the model after the fact. And then it makes it infinitely more scalable, doesn't it?
Yes. And often, if you do have lots of data, like I have at the moment, I'm just doing like one region and just getting it right, because with all of it just takes so long to do. It's better to just do sort of part of the model that you know is right, and then as it gets more complex you can add to it. That's the other thing, I think, when you're building a model, it does often end up getting quite complex, and, you know, to start, you know, to really make it as simple as possible as you can, and then go, is that sufficient, is that what I need? Usually it's not. So you have to go a little bit more complex and add a little bit more calculations, and, you know, add a bit more and a bit more. But if you kind of go in a logical format rather than, you know, same as like when you're building a formula, you know, they say rule of thumb, the FAST standard says rule of thumb, a formula should be no longer than your thumb. So we try not to have, massively long formulas, but, and sometimes it's necessary, but You know, we try to keep the formulas as short and succinct and clear and just kind of lay it out step by step by step, rather than just cramming the whole thing into one single row that nobody can understand. So, lots of I kind of jumped around, lots of different modeling issues there, but hopefully that makes sense.
No, it's all good. So for the audience that are slightly more, well, that have more expertise in Excel, shall we say, and they've maybe built a few models. You mentioned earlier on in the conversation that sometimes it's difficult to keep up with the pace of change, you know, when Excel changes and there's a new update and anything like that. So more recently, are there any sort of lesser known things or functions in Excel that you can use that people might not know about? I know at the Excel event you talked about dynamic arrays. I know they've been around for a while, but anything else like that that you think is potentially low-hanging fruit that people might not know about that they can start using?
Yeah, I chose to talk about dynamic arrays because they are so relevant for modelers, and still lots of people are not using them. So I had to harp on about dynamic arrays, but they are, they've been around for quite a while, but they're such a game changer. They just change the way that you build your formulas, and they do make it a lot easier in a lot of ways. But when it actually comes to modeling, like actually building a structured model, it can make things a little more complex. So, probably one of the things I posted about recently on LinkedIn, and I post a lot about modeling and Excel and all of that stuff because it's, you know, what I think is useful for people, is the Financial Modeling World Cup posted something about the absolute referencing. So getting the dollar signs, you know, whether you use the row or whether you use the column, and then that's not really necessary once you start using dynamic arrays, but you still need to understand where those dollar signs go. I think that's probably one of the more fundamental things in modeling, is you still, I think it's still important to get your dollar signs right. So using the F4 shortcut to be able to toggle between, you know, whether you fix the row or whether you fix the column or whether you fix both, because when you copy that reference, that changes the way that it refers. And if you've got, like, you know, 60 months across the page and 1,000 rows down the side, you do not want to be doing each of those individually. You want to be able to just build one single formula and have it copy all the way across and all the way down. It's just going to make your life a lot easier.
Very good. So everybody check out dynamic arrays.
Yeah, and referencing. Yeah, the dollar signs.
And referencing. Yeah. But very good. Excellent stuff. Cool. So, I mean, I'm conscious of your time because
yes.
You've got
meeting. Yes, I have. I actually, one thing I should mention, I run a Women in Financial Modeling meetup group. I started it because of the Financial Modeling World Cup, because there was so few women competing and in the top. So we're actually getting, there was a session last weekend, I think it was, and we get to it runs, I think, 8 times a year. So after each session, we get together and debrief. So we go, oh, what did you get for this question? Or, you know, what formula did you use for that one? And that sort of thing. So we try to get together each time there's a round, and we've got one coming up in about 10 minutes. So that's why I have to jump off. But looking forward to catching up with all of those. We actually get together quite a lot. We have different speakers and different like events and things. So just to try to encourage more women to get into financial modeling and to learn about it and to put financial modeler as their job title.
Yeah, very good. And you know, if there are any listeners that are ladies in finance and tech, then give me a shout.
Or identify as female, of course.
Absolutely, because you know I'm very conscious, and it's not deliberate, but obviously I've had a lot of guys on the podcast. You know, I'd love to speak to more people like Danielle. So if anybody knows of anybody, then give me a shout, have them on the podcast, and we'll get going with that as well. But I think it's great what you're doing there. So fabulous. But where can people find out more about you, Danielle? I'll obviously put the links in the show notes.
Yeah, probably on LinkedIn is where I hang out most of the time is probably the best way to get in touch with me and see what I'm doing or where in the world I'm going to be next. It's just so great to be. You know, our borders were shut for 2 years, nearly killed me. It was so hard not to travel. So I'm just so happy that that we're back and able to get around and share the love about Excel and financial modeling.
Fabulous. And this is a bonus question that wasn't in the topics that I gave. I like to catch people out a little bit. So the podcast is called Tech for Finance. So I always ask guests when I can, is there, and you can't say Excel, is there like an app, a browser extension, you know, a piece of software that you use day to day that you just couldn't live without?
Uber?
Can either I say in your Uber? Personal or professional life.
Can I say Uber?
Yes, you can say. Yes, you can say that Uber.
That's probably the app I use the most.
I suppose with the amount of traveling you do.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more. I do spend far too much time on my phone, and I have so many apps. I'm one of those people who never shuts down their apps. I've just always got them open on my. On my phone all the time. Yeah.
I need to get into the habit of turning off notifications where I can.
And WhatsApp. Doesn't. WhatsApp. It's everything's on WhatsApp.
So we're always going off, isn't it? Always going off. Yeah. Most bizarre place you've ever had to get an Uber?
I tried to get one in Montenegro last year, but they don't have it. It was awful. I had to get a bus.
Oh no.
It's
horrible when
across the border and my Uber didn't work. My phone didn't work either, so that was
But you're here and everything was fine, so where there's a will, there's a way, eh?
I did get back, yes.
Hey again, and thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard today, don't forget to like, review, and subscribe. And for more goodies, head over to techforfinance.com. See you soon.